Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Another gut punch for the Tennessee Volunteers over the weekend against Missouri. And to help us talk about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, kind of an unbelievable week for Tennessee basketball last week. You lose on the buzzer beater on the road at Vanderbilt, and then followed up. You're trailing the whole game. You make a dramatic comeback in the second half. You take the lead, and then all of a sudden, Missouri hits you again with the buzzer beater. What do you make of where this Tennessee basketball team is right now, and how about that game on Saturday?
Yeah, I thought, when you looked at the Vanderbilt game, I thought Tennessee just played badly in a lot of facets of that game. Not kind of up to the standard you've seen them play throughout much of the season. The Missouri game was similar for the first half anyway. You saw that team kind of return to what you thought it might be for most of the season in the second half, and then you get kicked in the bits right at the end. And that's hard to stomach, but Rick Barnes' post-game message was kind of strangely very, very positive. I think he very much just valued what he saw from the team in the second half. After, you know, a game and a half, you could argue 3.5 games of poor basketball at a lot of stretches.
Yeah, I almost took that, Mike. I mean, obviously, fantastic fight and comeback, and boy, did they need Tyreek Key to. I feel like last week, as bad of a week as it was with those two losses, I felt like Tyreek Key coming on is a big deal. They need that to keep going. You know, inside they got some guys playing better too. I mean, it's not all bad, but I also felt like maybe those comments were a little bit of Rick Barnes seeing a hurt team and trying. It's like as a coach instinct of, okay, it's time to love them up right now because that's a heck of a week for them. But first of all, one of the issues the other night, of course, is that you've got now Josiah James hurt. He hurt his ankle late in the Vanderbilt game, and then now you got a hip flexor for Julian Phillips. What's your expectation for those guys here in the short term with this huge game coming up Wednesday against Alabama?
Yeah, Josiah, I wasn't too surprised to see him not play just with the way that he was helped off the court Wednesday. I think it would have been a surprise to see him turn around and play again that quickly. Julian's a little more interesting just because he got hurt Friday in practice, is my understanding of what Rick said after the game Saturday. Tried to play Saturday and played pretty well for the opening minutes, rebounding-wise, getting out there, creating havoc, and then just couldn't. Hip flexors can be tricky, finicky things to deal with. So I that one could linger perhaps maybe longer, but you know, we talked to Rick later today, so we'll have more of an idea then in terms of where those guys are.
Mike, we've talked for the majority of this season about Tennessee's defense and the historic pace that they've been on. Been exposed a little bit the last couple of times out. How concerned are you on the defensive side of things based on what you've seen in the last two games?
I mean, the three-point numbers are concerning, but the three-point numbers were also, you know, out of this world beyond any reasonable expectation for any defense. There is that. I think Ken Pom tweeted it maybe a month ago about not necessarily regression to the mean, but just it's above and beyond where the three-point defense will be, and it's an element of some teams is missing shots. Well, teams didn't miss shots last week. Vanderbilt hit 10, Missouri hit 14, including the heave at the buzzer there. Tennessee hadn't given up more than 8 in a game. So I think seeing that those numbers of three-pointers is concerning, but it also is a reality that at some point shots are going to fall for other teams, and for Tennessee, unfortunately, it's kind of happening in a barrage right now in the last two games because Auburn couldn't score to save their lives. But Florida had a little bit of that too early on with hitting three-pointers in that loss down there. So it's been a thing that's going on. I don't know that it's overly concerning as much as an element of these teams has made a lot of good shots on Tennessee.
So what's the tangible cause here? First of all, I mean, a week ago, Tennessee still has a chance for an SEC championship, which is a big deal and is not something Tennessee has done a lot of. I mean, that's done, right? I mean, Alabama's not going to lose enough games for that to become a possibility. But also, I mean, Tennessee had been in the mix for its first number one seed ever. Where do you think the stakes are right now in terms of turning this around with a tough schedule, not just Alabama? I mean, I'm assuming right now they're still in good shape to be like a three or something in Greensboro, but you lose a few more and you might be who knows where, right?
The next three games are really huge for that. Alabama coming to Tennessee, Tennessee going to Kentucky, and then Tennessee goes to Texas A&M. And A&M is very good. So, I mean, this is a three-game stretch. It's going to dictate a lot, both in terms of SEC tournament standings, just to try to stay in that top four for that tournament, and also try to stay in the three-seed, four-seed line of the NCAA tournament. Because right now, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a tailspin going on in terms of wins and losses, and certainly with the way that Tennessee played against Florida and Vanderbilt in the first half against Missouri. They kind of got to right that ship right now because this is the worst stretch of their schedule in terms of difficulty of opponents. Their SEC schedule was nice for the first month, but it very much was loaded right through the middle stretch here, and you've still got a trip at Auburn to the end of the regular season as well. So Tennessee's got four games in that final stretch there that are pretty tricky.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Mike, to that point, I mean, we're talking about college athletes here, and you obviously things aren't going very well for Tennessee right now. How big of a mental test is this for this group, do you think, with all the noise around the tournament, lack of success that Rick Barnes has had? I mean, I'm sure that they hear about that, they know about that, and now things have started to go the other way on them this past week. What's kind of the test for this group mentally, do you think, right now, and how equipped do you think they are to come out on the other side of it?
Well, I thought Saturday was a lot of that. In terms of a mental test coming off the Vanderbilt game. Because, yeah, again, Tennessee hadn't played well for three straight games before going into Missouri anyway. And then that first half happened, and you're like, oh, my gosh, like this team might be in a free fall. I mean, this team might be absolutely spiraling down to a 5-6 seed. I got a text from someone during the game saying, enjoy the NIT run. Like that's just, like, that's kind of where that first half was going. It was just such a rough half for Tennessee, but then you did see some mental toughness in the second half. You also saw hero ball from Tyreek Key, which I think maybe covered up some more of those errors that were there. But Jonas Adu played well. Jermaine Mashak played well. Tobe Awaka had moments. So there were positive things there. But yeah, I mean, Alabama coming to town after that is pretty brutal because you might have a great fight and be turning in the right direction and still lose by 15 because Alabama's just that good right now.
Yeah, and you know, the first half was brutal, but it was also, I mean, Missouri was hitting every shot, right? I mean, what'd they end up, 14 for 26 from three?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's just absurd. I mean, like that's just absurd. And some of it is that Tennessee's defense wasn't as good as it's been, but some that's basketball sometimes, but I do watch this team, Mike, and it's just over and over again. It's like, don't take the average early shot clock three-pointer when you can hammer people with Kamwa and Awaka and Plavsic, and you know, you can, and Phillips that needs to be more of a slasher and all that stuff too. It just bothers me that they settle so often. And even Ziegler, who is a terrific player, I wonder if he's wearing down a little bit at times when I watch him settle. What do you think just about that and their offensive approach? I feel like that's got to be addressed by Rick here.
Yeah, I mean, Zakai was playing at an absolutely elite level. I think through the Texas game is probably when he last played off, in the 22-10 in that game, I think. He hasn't been that same caliber the past few games because you were talking about a guy who had completely become an elite point guard through the January stretch there, but February has not been the same. And he is the only point guard in the roster. And that is probably something that's going to wear at some point if it hasn't already. But overall, this team's offense hasn't been pretty all season. And we've kind of known that. That's why I think that Texas game was so interesting, because that's where you come out of that game going, wow, like this could be a Final Four type team. If they can do this offensively where you hammer the team inside, as you mentioned, with what Olivier did in that game, and you get that production and you match it with good enough defense to hold Texas to 71, you're like, okay, this team could do something. It could be a one seed, could be a long tournament team. but the offense has been so lethargic since at so many points. And they haven't been able to count on the defense at the same time, which has been concerning because that's been where they've been able to say, okay, well, we only scored 59 points. We gave up 52, so we're going to win that game. Tennessee hasn't had that same thing. Olivier, I thought, needed to be more involved the other day. Julian slashing, to me, has been one of the biggest things this team has needed because one of the ways they came back the other day against Missouri was the free throw line. That was a huge piece of that. And this has not been a team that gets the free throw line often or well. Zakai is the best at that. Julian is also right there. Those are the two guys who can, I think, create their own shots the best, get fouled, do good things offensively. That's something they need. Santi, Josiah, those guys aren't take a guy off the dribble, get your open shot, get to the foul line kind of guys. So they need everyone to do the things they do well if they're going to have a shot at all.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Mike, great stuff as always. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Mike Wilson with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Vols, 615-737-1025. Another buzzer-beater defeat for Tennessee over the weekend. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll also get into the Vanderbilt Commodores, maybe making a surge here as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Mike Wilson for joining us in the last segment. I got a four-pack of wristbands to the 50th Annual National Wild Turkey Federation Convention coming up this week at Opryland, Wednesday through Friday, to give away. Be caller number 5-615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a four-pack of wristbands to the 50th Annual National Wild Turkey Federation Convention coming up at Opryland, Wednesday through Friday, 615-737-1025. Joe, the Vols fall again, 86-85 the final score. They were trailing pretty much the whole game, and they came back, dramatic comeback in the second half, and Missouri hits the game winner on a buzzer beater, not quite from half court, but impressive shot at the end of the game from Missouri, and that is the second consecutive game Tennessee has gone down at the hands of a buzzer beater. The first one to Vanderbilt, and now to Missouri, and Tennessee now 8-4 in the SEC, 19-6 overall, and as you said, Joe, the hopes of an SEC regular season title probably all but gone for Tennessee at this point.
Yeah, let's Alabama's winning it. Great game, Alabama at Auburn the other day. Man, Brandon Miller, I don't know if you saw the and one dunk he had, but my goodness. I had no idea he was that good, by the way, at Cane Ridge. I mean, he was a good recruit, but, like, holy crap, that guy is good. Alabama's winning it. Whether they can lose by 100 at Tennessee Wednesday, and they're going to win the SEC championship, but – which is disappointing because Tennessee was right there. First of all, I put this out on Twitter. I was hoping someone would come up with an example. I'm sure there are some, but how many teams in a week, in their two games in a given week, have lost on two buzzer beaters like that?
It can't be a long list.
It can't be a long list. You know, one guy who you got a feel for because he's been such a good player for Tennessee and a good find a few years ago, and he's a leader and he's a really good defensive player, and he's given him so many big performances, won him a lot of games. I mean, Vescovi, actually the only reason that they're in position to lose at Vanderbilt on a buzzer beater, you know, they came back because of him. He finally hit a couple huge shots late in that game to flip it back to Tennessee, but he misses the 1-1. He helps a little bit too much off Tyron Lawrence. And then the other night, he hits free throws, then he misses. And then, like you said, there's a lane violation, but actually he missed that free throw too. Even if they didn't call the lane violation, he went 0 for 2. And yeah, it's just a brutal week for him to be sort of the, you know, I'm hoping Vol Twitter is leaving him alone this week. But, you know, they need him, but they also need – They need to be less reliant on their perimeter players. It's just broken record, but they have to. And I think Kamwa is the key. I think he's the guy who kind of, you know, should be reliable, get to the line, get them through these droughts where they get into settling for launching, casting up threes early in the shot clock, and it's not a sustainable way to play. I still believe they're good enough to make a run. Absolutely. I really do. They have the pieces to make a run. They have a coach with a history of not making enough runs, but they've got some things to figure out. They got to get healthy too. But they got a brutal stretch, like Mike Wilson said. Not just Alabama, but the next three games, it could look a lot different. It could look a lot worse here in about a week and a half.
If you would have told me heading into the game that Tyree Key had 23 points on 5 of 9 from 3, I would have told you Tennessee won by 35 in that game against Missouri.
Yeah, and that's the only way that they came back to be in position to win. And they were in strong position to win and let it get away. There's so many things that happened late in that game that you're just like, oh. Like, you know, they fouled on purpose. You know, which I don't hate, but they fouled on purpose with 4.2 left. You know, like I'm a big believer in like the foul instead of letting a team launch a three. But of course, it ended up all you just make your free throws, and you win both games. Or you know, actually in the Vanderbilt game, take the dunk, you probably win that game.
Joey from Gallatin says, "Done watching the Vols play. Rick Barnes can't get him ready for real games. March is going to be pitiful." This is from Joey from Gallatin. On the text line. I think you're going to find a lot of Tennessee fans that feel that way this morning.
Yep.
They should be in the tournament. I'm over here just looking from the outside, looking in.
Is Kentucky actually, they're probably right on that bubble line now, right? Yeah. I'm looking at Shelby Mast for USA Today. He's got them second team out. So they're right there. I mean, if they beat Tennessee and sweep them and beat them this weekend, they're probably back in good shape, you know?
That's this weekend again?
That is.
Woo!
Yeah, you don't even know your cat schedule anymore. My goodness.
It's totally given up.
Yep, that's too bad.
That is too bad. But Tennessee, I mean, you're in, I don't know if I'd call it a free fall mode right now, but you're in a rough spot, and you got Alabama coming in on Wednesday. I mean, the good news is that game's at home, but you need this one. Like we brought it up with Mike. First off, Missouri's a good team. They're not – I don't think an elite team, but they're 19-6.
Yeah, they're an NCAA
overall,
tournament
they're a good team. So, I mean, they shot the ball well. I mean, to your point, Joe, they shot almost 54% from three the other day. When you do that, you're going to give yourself a pretty good chance to win.
Well, especially when 54% and you make 14.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
It's a pretty good night shooting the basketball from Missouri. But if you're Tennessee, like the mental tests now, I mean, look, they're going to get in the tournament. This is a stretch coming up that's going to be really challenging for them. Does this group have the mental fortitude, for lack of a better phrase, to turn this thing around as they move forward here right now? I don't know. I mean, they need, you know, with Josiah James out and Julian Phillips kind of banged up right now, we've talked about it all year. Like, they need somebody on the wing to be able to take charge. And with James out right now, you were hoping it would be Phillips, and now he's banged up too. And they just, between that and basically having one point guard, you're in a heck of a spot offensively.
The thing is, they still have some good enough depth. Like Jemiah Mashak, I thought was really good the other night. He's a good defender, hit some shots, hit some huge free throws in that game. So this is a chance for him to grow as a player. I don't know who's going to play, but even if those two guys miss and they beat Alabama Wednesday, I'm not surprised. Let's remember, first of all, they project as a 3 seed right now. That means you're on the very short list of best teams in the country, projecting as a 3 seed. 1 seeds right now, Kansas. Tennessee beat them. 1 seed right now, Texas. Tennessee beat them. 1 seed right now, Purdue. I watched them lose at Northwestern yesterday. I mean, it's college basketball. Home road means more than in any other sport. So it's a bad stretch right now. They still have the ingredients. So if you're a Vols fan who wants to just tune out, that's fine. But I will be watching for you when
they get hot
again. We'll
give you a warm
welcome
to Rupp on Saturday.
There
I'm
you
so
go.
Excited.
You don't even know.
Week.
You just found out there's the game.
I know.
Oh, man. Well, that's a huge one. I mean, it's a huge week. But I wouldn't give up on them yet. That's all I'm saying. Now, I also wouldn't trust them in March, as we've talked about. But I'm just saying, I don't think this is circling the drain yet here.
So on the other side of things, Vanderbilt goes on the road on Saturday and takes down Florida 88-80. Liam Robbins, 32 points, 10 rebounds in the game.
And dunked on Colin Castleton's head like, oh boy, that was a great big man battle.
So what do you make of this past week for Vanderbilt? You take down the Vols on a buzzer beater, and now you go on the road at Florida, come away with an 88-80 win, and Liam Robbins with just a monster game on Saturday.
Right now, Vanderbilt is they are an NCAA tournament caliber team for sure. Like, You know, if they played like this or close to this early in the season, right now they'd be like a 7 seed. I mean, like, you know, but of course it's going to be a super. I mean, they are a super, super long shot because of their numbers and because of the non-league performance. But man, they're good right now. They are legitimately a good basketball team. It's kind of happened last year too. They caught fire, and of course last year a lot of it was that Robbins was hurt a lot of the year. You get him in there and it was like, oh, okay, yep, I can see it with this guy. I think Robbins may be pushing himself to the possibility of being a rotational big in the NBA. We'll see. But you know, I mean, he's out there hitting threes now too. But Vanderbilt's 6-6 in the SEC. I mean, Vanderbilt actually has a shot to be like finish third in the SEC. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, they go to South Carolina tomorrow. You got to win that game. Huge one Saturday night with Auburn coming in. If they went on a crazy run here, then then we would be talking when the SEC tournament comes around about them trying to play themselves into a big. But they're a ton of fun to watch right now. And that was a huge deal for them to go win at Florida, also a bubble team. That's a team that is right around the bubble right now, to go win on their floor. And follow up the Tennessee win to kind of, to validate it, as Stackhouse used that word after the win over Tennessee. They're fun.
Coming up next, we'll get into the Predators, give the latest update on the Preds, their game on Saturday, the update on the status of Philip Forsberg. Also get back into the Super Bowl as well, all that coming up. Speaking of the Preds fans, hang out tonight before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar & Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 102.5-106.3 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Preds back in action tonight, taking on the Arizona Coyotes. That's all coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on Super Bowl 57 as Kansas City wins again, taking down the Philadelphia Eagles last night. We'll get back into that game coming up here in just a few minutes. Joe, first, Nashville Predators in action over the weekend, and they win 2-1 in overtime against Philadelphia on the road. So they bounce back from what was a brutal performance against the Vegas Golden Knights, and they win in overtime on the road. Matt Duchene, the game winner. On Saturday, Nino Niederreiter scoring a goal as well, and the Predators skate away with the win in Philadelphia. Really, the story of the game, though, was Philip Forsberg going down in that game. He took, honestly, Joe, what I thought was like a fairly normal hit from Ristolainen in that game, and he landed really hard on the ice, and he was down and looked a little wobbly getting back up. And I thought to myself, oh, boy, that is just about the last thing the Predators need right now, is Philip Forsberg going down. Now, the Predators came out with an update yesterday. Forsberg is day-to-day with an upper body injury. And when I saw day-to-day, I thought, well, I mean, all things considered, I don't know what day-to-day means in the NHL. It's different people have different definitions. But I was thinking maybe week-to-week, maybe something they could be dealing with. So day-to-day might be best-case scenario when it comes to the aftermath of what we saw from Philip Forsberg on Saturday.
Yeah, no IR and no week-to-week. We've seen week-to-week not – we've seen week-to-week be like a week, yeah, too. But usually that tells you – like week-to-week, I feel like I'm always thinking, okay, so 4 to 6,
right,
or whatever. You know, like who knows with that. Like could it have been a shoulder or whatever, the head hit. I mean, I think I'd say overall – that's a great update on him. We'll see, you know, can he – so would not expect him tonight against the Coyotes.
No.
But potentially against the Bruins, when you would want – you'd want all hands on deck for that one Thursday.
You would want all hands on deck for that one. Preds back in action tonight, taking on Arizona. This is a game, make no mistake about it, you need to win tonight if you're the Predators. You're at home. You're taking on an Arizona team that is – terrible, the third worst team in the Western Conference. This is a game you got to win tonight if you're the Predators. And then, like you said, taking on Boston on Thursday, who's been the best team in the league all year, and an afternoon matchup with Florida Saturday, and then second half of back-to-back on the road on Sunday against Minnesota. That's a massive game coming up later this weekend. But this is a huge week for the Predators. Entering play tonight, you're at 56 points. You're 4 points back of both Calgary and Minnesota. Minnesota holds the final spot in the playoffs right now. Colorado also at 60 points, and they've jumped up to third in the Central Division. So that's going to be kind of a seesaw in the Pacific, and then those final two spots in the Central as well. But if you're Predators, like, you can't drop Arizona game tonight. Like, you got to win that game, see what you can do against Boston, and then Florida and Minnesota back-to-back coming up this weekend. It all starts tonight, though. Like, we can't be coming in here tomorrow morning, Joe, and be talking about a 3-2 loss to the Arizona Coyotes tonight for the Predators.
We could. It'd be
for quite, their sake.
It'd be quite a conversation tomorrow.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, I have to win this one. I thought Saturday that it was. I mean, they were sitting there on like four shots for about 15 minutes, and it was again just really a struggle manufacturing offense. And also, you know, UC Saros saved some bacon as he often does in that game. But hey, Matt Duchene drove some play, you know, and obviously had the game winner. But Matt Duchene, I thought, flying around and looking like you need him to look. So found a way, and that's what matters.
Had a goal and an assist, and back at it tonight against Arizona, and we'll see what the lines look like if Philip Forsberg can't go tonight against Arizona. I would be very surprised if Philip Forsberg is back in there tonight against the Coyotes, but we'll keep you updated on his status as the week progresses here. We'll have Preds Pick to Click coming up later in the hour, or later in the show, coming up at 8:45. So looking forward to that coming up next hour. Joe, I saw a stat that Marcus Mosher of Pro Football Focus threw out there, talking about the offenses that have won the Super Bowl lately. So he threw this out there. The last seven Super Bowl winners, how they rank in points per game. Kansas City this year is at number one. L.A. from last year was at seven. The Bucs in 20 were at number 3. Chiefs from 19 are number 5. 18 Patriots were number 4. The 17 Eagles were number 3. And the 16 Patriots were number 2. So every one of them, a top 10 offense in terms of points per game. And all of them except last year's Rams, a top 5 offense in terms of points per game. And he goes on to say, defense wins championships is a cool phrase, but it's just not accurate. This is from Marcus Mosher from Pro Football Focus that is throwing that out there. And obviously the Chiefs get it done last night, and they were the number one offense in the league this year in terms of points per game.
Say again, 20?
Bucks.
2020 Bucks, and they were
number 3.
Yeah. You know who number 4 was that year?
Titans.
The Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's – I mean, defense wins championships is – defense can win championships. I would argue – see, I mean, that's a fair point. I mean, it's not like this is some new conversation. I mean, it's all the game is geared toward the offense. I think it is more important to have a great offense and a great defense. I would also say, going back to those 2020 Bucks, defense was a pretty big part of them winning a championship. Defense, particularly in that game, was completely overwhelming to Kansas City, and Patrick Mahomes was basically helpless in that game, having to throw passes while upside down to even get a pass off. So, you flip it around, how many of those teams had bad defenses, you know?
Well, think about the Rams last year. I mean, you had Aaron Donald wrecking the game in the Super Bowl. I mean, they're pretty good defense.
Right. So it's good to have both things, you know? I mean, that's the thing, like the Eagles, great defense this year. But you did see second half, I mean, they didn't have answers for Kansas City.
Well, but to the larger point, I mean, I think you need both. That's what we've learned. Like, you need an elite level offense, and you need a good defense. Like, that's what the formula has been. And you know, if you're the Titans, I think the Titans have a when healthy, a good enough defense to compete and win a Super Bowl. Their offense is nowhere close, and that's the problem right now. How close can you get it in one off season? I don't know. But, I mean, those numbers are what they are. I mean, you're talking about top 5 offenses in most cases in terms of points per game that have won the Super Bowl over the last 7 years. The one exception was the number 7 offense last year. I mean, you need to get to the level you were a couple of years ago offensively and have a better defense than you had that year, and then you're in a good spot. That's hard to get back to.
So when's the last Super Bowl champion that was – defense driven. I think you'd probably, well, you'd look at
Broncos.
And that was, you know, Peyton, but he was all banged up, and that their defense just won. Now, look, I mean, the Patriots now in the Super Bowl, in the actual game, that 13-3 just sludgefest against the Rams, that was all about defense. And the Patriots, a lot of the Patriots championships, you know, their defense doesn't get enough credit for how important it was. I mean, the Seahawks, when they blew up the Broncos, that team, that was defense first. That was a defense first team. The team right before that, the Ravens, that was a defense first team. So that's still in the last decade that you've had multiple champions that were driven by defense first. But it does feel like it's headed more toward better have the offense and, you know, be good on defense, and that's a better formula than be great on defense and okay on offense.
Well, the interesting part, though, this year is, like, the offense was down a little bit this year when it comes to just the total numbers overall. Now, Kansas City wasn't. They were still at 30 points a game, and they lost Tyreek Hill and didn't seem to matter all that much. And Patrick Mahomes goes and wins another MVP, and now they're Super Bowl champions again. But the league itself, like, the defense, I felt like, maybe caught up a little bit this year to what we've been used to seeing the last couple of years. Is that a trend that's going to continue? Is that a one-year thing with the quarterbacks in the AFC and some of the offenses? I mean, you would think they're going to find a way to score some points as they move forward here. But if you're the Titans, like, you've got to get yourself to a place where maybe it's not 30 points a game, but get back into the 23, 24, 25 points per game range. I think you'd like the results most of the time with the defense you got.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but that's
way easier said than
done. That's the target, you know, to at least get in the mid-20s and, you know, give your defense a chance, because you can win a lot of games with this Titans defense if you have a competent offense across from it. Yeah, I feel like it's always cyclical, you know, defense will catch up to something, and it's constant, you know, it's constant back and forth with that. But also with the league, if you're going to have ticky-tack holding calls like last night, and you're going to be breathe on a quarterback, and you get a you know, roughing every time, you know, that serves to help the offense. Most of the rules do.
LD from McMinnville on the text line says, when does NFL draft season start for Robbie and Rex Road?
Oh,
from
boy.
LD from McMinnville.
Oh, here we go.
I don't think
go.
We're that far away.
I mean, those
we're
guys.
Getting closer.
Well, I want to say, like, 2 weeks from today, they will be in Indy. Yeah. So 2 weeks from today, Carthon and Vrabel will be talking in Indy, and they'll be the meat market week. So, yeah.
We're getting close.
We're right on the verge.
And then we get a whole lot of draft talk going.
Time to get some mock drafts.
I will, of all the things we cover and talk about, by the time the NFL draft finally comes around, there's nothing I'm more ready to get out of the way than the NFL draft.
Right.
It's like, let's go. Let's get in there.
Yeah. And I love the draft. But
me too.
I agree. It's like the build-up to football season, you get the payoff of football. The build-up to the draft is like, okay, draft the freaking players already, you know? Enough of this. It's huge news, and people are all over it, but it is not nearly as fun.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Gonna get to you, girl. Step by step.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad, I turn things over to you.
All right. I got two beefs from the weekend, being in my car both times.
Multiple beefs.
Yeah. First, the lesser one. So driving into a parking lot that was overpacked Saturday, and there's a big grass field where some people had to park in the grass field. Okay, so trying to drive into the parking lot through this, it's like a small little. Well, you guys have been to this place, Mill Creek.
Yeah. Okay. I knew you were talking about that place.
Yeah, which was absurdly packed Saturday afternoon. But I always go up there and try to see if I can still get a spot. So it's like the little drive up to the, and there's like a huge grass field to the right. Okay, some cars were on the grass field, but I was like, I'm gonna go up there and just see. So you got three people who park in the grass field and then decide to walk in the middle of the road, and this happens, and sometimes you don't see someone or whatever. This dude, like, a couple times, like, did a little head turn. Like, basically, he knows that we're right behind him.
Correct.
And they're just going to keep walking slowly in front of us.
Yes.
You have an entire grass field to your right. First of all, like, I wouldn't necessarily trust someone to not run my ass over if I was doing that.
Say.
I mean, I didn't seriously consider it. But, like, why not, one, be courteous and also maybe think of self-preservation just in case whoever's behind the wheel, is not someone that, you don't want to tangle with. So that was very annoying. And, again, it was just a little bit of that whole, like, head turn. Okay, usually if I see the head turn, now that means, okay, oh, yeah, now they'll shift over to the right, get out of the way. No. Head turn. Right, and I think they slowed down a little bit. So
even better.
But the bigger issue I had was Friday, picking up my daughter from school, right around, so middle school and high school, same campus, got the same time. Okay, so whenever this happens, I always have her meet me at this kind of like the side lot, but then you have to get into the traffic. Okay, parents, do you not teach your children that you let a car in? When you let a car in when you come up to the, you come to a point here. Like, are you teaching your kids to just completely ignore people and never let anyone in? Because every teenager I encountered Friday would not let me in to the point that I started to glare at them. And a few of them, I was like, oh, yeah, I know. Okay, I know who you are. I know who your parents are. Okay, we're going to have a chat. Teach your children to have proper driver etiquette. You don't have, you come up to a thing and there's someone waiting to get in, let one person in. I finally forced my way in front of someone and it was like, hey, listen, that's a nice car you're driving. You want to smash it? Let's go. I mean, is this where we're headed? Is this where we're headed in society where we don't have proper driving etiquette?
Yes, that's where we're headed.
Yes.
I mean, when I was a teenager, that's what I was taught. My parents told me to do that, and I watched my parents do that, and so I did that. How many cars just totally blew by me? And not just me, other people waiting. Five? That's a significant decent sample number. Size. Yeah. Maybe these were just the five kids with the five parents who just decided not to teach them driver etiquette. But I'm a little bit concerned about where this is going.
You should be. I mean, some of the activity that goes beyond, like, speeding, which is a big problem, but just the behavior in the school zone, parking lot, pickup zone can be quite interesting sometimes. I've seen some crosswalk people get sideways on some drivers coming through there, man. I mean, I'm talking waving the stop sign at people, chasing them down the street.
Oh, yeah.
It happens up in Robertson County every now and then.
Well, yeah. Well, we've got a couple guys who have been doing that consistently for years, and they do a great job. And one of them gets real mad if you go a little bit. I mean, he's yelled at me before, like, slow down. I'm like, dude, I'm going 9.
You should be going 7.
Yeah,
max.
Yeah. But
I will say, in the high school parking lots, I remember mine. Like, it was cutthroat. Like, everyone gets out. Everyone's trying to get home. I mean, then again, our parking system was awful. Nobody would ever let anyone else in. So
that's ridiculous.
So then I, like, do you know what I mean? So the parent.
It's not okay.
The parent area, I guess, where they would pick up was separate. And you had, like, your own ins and outs. But the student parking, like that was people running to their cars because you would sit in that, you could sit in that parking lot for like 40 minutes because then other people don't let you in. So then you're like, why am I going to let anybody else in? Because they're not letting me in. So I'm just going to do whatever I can to get out of here.
This is how the aliens take over the world and kill us all. Which, by the way, we may have some UFOs flying around getting shot down.
Yeah, I did see that tweet.
Apparently.
So you're guilty of this too, then. You didn't let anybody in. So be the person who says, you know what? Here, I'm going to set a standard of decency in human behavior.
I let one person in. That turns into four.
Wow.
Because of the way the parking lot was set up, it was so bad. Like, there was literally one exit. You had about 700 kids in your graduating class. Everyone's leaving at the same time, and it's just complete chaos.
So Michelle's part of the problem.
I am part of the problem. At least I'm admitting it.
No, I appreciate that.
I don't do it in real life.
Okay. Well, you've grown into being a responsible driver who loves
it. It should be every other.
But that's one of those things. Like, if it was that bad, I almost feel like, and I kind of do here now that I've seen this, like maybe this should be addressed.
Although, I will say, by
the adults around.
Probably the chief level of petty that I get in my entire life is when, like, there's traffic on the interstate.
Yes,
and you're
Robbie.
In the same lane, and all of a sudden some joker comes like, the shoulder of the road just comes down all the way to the end, and by the time they're ready to get on the exit, they try to just cut over in front of people. Like, I get actively upset and start yelling at people. I'm like, no, do not let him over. No, don't do it.
I agree. That is fine to not let them in. And I have definitely denied that person, which you should. But
yes, you should.
But they always get let in.
I know, which drives me insane.
Yeah. Like, I guess I'd prefer that to, like, never letting anybody in a normal situation. But, yeah, I'm with you. That's when you deny it, kids.
Your parking lot rant took me back to a previous rant that I had about the people that are on the crosswalk and just take their sweet time getting across the street. A lot of unawareness out there.
I just wouldn't, like, be comfortable
very trusting.
Just staying in front of a car.
Especially a stranger.
Or people just on their phone walking across the crosswalk, like just no care in the world. Eyes are glued to the cell phone. A car could be coming at you.
Yeah. You need to have a little bit of spatial awareness of what's going on out there.
Well, college campuses, that's where you really see pedestrians who are brave and like just know that you're not going to run them over.
Well, the myth is you get free tuition if you get hit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we've talked about that.
Brian from Memphis says, Joe on the road is my spirit animal. Maddie says, did your dentures fall out or you were yelling at them? Smiley face. I guess that's a good way of calling you old.
What the hell is that about, Maddie?
He puts them in his cup when he yells at them.
You know, I just went to the dentist and my teeth are in great shape. Thank you.
Dennis on the text line says, I just pulled up to work and while I was listening to your rant, I encountered two four-way stops where people had no idea how they work. This is from Dennis on the text line. The four-way stop, there could be a whole lot of just staring. It's like, dude, you've been at the stop sign for 2 minutes before I got here. It's your turn to go. Let's go.
That one should be pretty. The two-way stop sometimes can be, you know, if somebody's turning left or whatever, but the four-way is very simple.
You would think.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
John on the text line says, everyone is in a rush to go nowhere. It's a nightmare. It's from John. That's a good way to sum it up.
You basically just described life.
He did. 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Super Bowl and the official beginning of the offseason in the NFL as well. All that coming up next. Make sure you tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to the future Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Visit TJAndersonHomes.com to see why they're referred to so often. And Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.